It's time to cruise the highways and byways of the auto industry's past, present, and future. Join us in exploring the vehicles, people, events, and places that have shaped the way we move. This is the Drive History Podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the Drive History Podcast. This is Brian Corey, joined as always by Jordan Stead.
What's going on, my friends?
How's it going, Jordan?
It's going all right, man. It's raining outside. We're in here. It's dry in here. It's all good.
Can't beat that. It's also like 75 degrees in this office. And
it really is. It's kind of tropical in here.
It's painted the walls green. Need to hang up a few plants. We'll pretend that we're doing this from Hawaii.
These plants do seem to be doing well. And by these plants, I do mean that one plant right there.
Have to have a little oxygen producer in here.
I understand completely.
On this episode, we are covering April 2nd through the 8th, and we have quite a few interesting stories for you. Let's dive in.
Let's do it.
April 2nd, 1875, Walter Chrysler is born. He has quite an interesting origin story. Maybe that's not quite the right word. He just has a really amazing professional career. It started as an engineer for the railroad. He kind of caught the eye of a designer at General Motors in like the early 1900s, and ultimately would get hired at Buick to kind of just increase its manufacturing efficiency, making a whopping $6,000 a year.
Hold on here. Like, here's the question I have. How do you quote unquote get noticed by someone at Buick when you're working as a machinist in the railroad industry? Like, you're not ripping a post on Twitter, you know? Like, what's how do you I don't know, maybe it's I'm showing my age here, but
they use Telegram now.
Exactly. I don't understand how people did things prior to mass communication.
Engineering mixers? I don't know. Yeah, that's a great question.
How did our parents meet and decide to actually meet at one place and decide to go on that first date and not miss each other by 10 minutes and then be calling the empty landline? And then
my dad hit my mom on the head with a book in school.
Nice.
And that's how they met.
You can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
There was a time when that was the way, I guess.
I think it was more like a love tap. We'll get him in here someday.
Nice. Yeah. Next guest.
But so he starts working at Buick.
Making champagne colored cars?
Yeah, probably.
Nice.
Absolutely. Well, it wouldn't be long before he's drinking champagne because Billy Durant, who had founded GM, got kicked out by the board of directors due to some failed deals. And he ultimately retakes control. And at the time, Chrysler puts in his resignation. But based on his work ethic and everything he'd done for the company, Billy Durant asks him to stay. And in camaraderie with the people that had brought him on, he says no. Durant offers him the leadership of Buick Division. He still says no. And then he says, I'll give you $10,000 a month for 3 years with $500,000 in stock bonuses at the end of each of those years. $10,000 a month in, this is 1916, is $285,000.
Damn.
So he kind of shakes his head, asks him to repeat him the offer, ultimately says, yeah, let's go. He starts working at GM, making $6,000 a year, and leaves one of the richest men in the world 3 years later with more than $10 million in the bank, just in stock, which he uses to go and buy Maxwell Motor Company or Maxwell Motor Corporation, which he ultimately turns into Chrysler.
Wow. I was looking at this and didn't realize that the first part was $6,000 a year. And then it was
$10,000 a month
plus the stock.
Right.
So yeah, homeboy got the pay raise right there.
He did all right. I mean, you've heard of the Chrysler building in New York.
Yeah, that old thing. That is, that's incredible. Also, again, how did this happen? Like, what was the connection? What did this guy do that was so great?
That's a good question. I feel like
tangibly, I mean,
no,
like what was the day to day thing that
why
he
was
did?
He so good.
And Billy's like, yo, I gotta have you, man. Here's a bazillion dollars an hour.
Efficiency.
Yes.
Right. I mean, it's gotta be something. He's got to prove his worth. mean, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of cars to sell to even be justifying that at the time, because a car costs $500 then.
You know, I gotta say, you know, my love for Buick, aka not a big love, but you probably have to pay me that as well to even get me interested in doing something with Buick.
I have to pay you $10,000 to buy a Buick.
I mean,
I almost sent you a picture of a champagne Buick Century the other day. Yeah,
well, it's easy. Anytime you see a Buick, it's going to be champagne colored. So,
Anyway, another wild American automotive icon, Alfred P. Sloan, on April 2nd, 1956, he stepped down as chairman. He had served as the president of General Motors since 1923. So, just before Walter Chrysler left the company, or excuse me, just after Walter Chrysler had left General Motors, Alfred Sloan became president, and he stayed in that role for 20-something years. A few of the iconic things that he did, I just really think it's interesting, is developing the pricing model for brands within, like, under one umbrella. Mm-hmm. So at General Motors, it'd be Chevrolet to Pontiac to Oldsmobile to Buick to Cadillac at the time, to kind of prevent those brands from, you know, advertising and marketing against each other. If you own a Chevrolet, you want to own a Buick, right?
Interesting.
Yeah, and then he retired at age 80. People worked too long, even back then.
Yeah, although something tells me maybe he wasn't even working that hard. Probably. I don't know. If you're in a position like that, you're probably chilling.
True.
You're probably drinking a lot of champagne, going on a lot of business trips. You're doing your thing. You're not on the factory floor, let's put it that way.
That's true. That is true. April 2nd, 1995, Argentinian adventurer Emilio Scotto finishes his record-setting motorcycle journey of 457,000 miles. This is an amazing story to me. I was just reading about this. This guy quit a job as a sales rep at Pfizer, the pharmaceutical company, and left to see the world in 1985 on a 1980 Honda Goldwing. He traveled up through South America, eventually making it to New York, where he ran out of money, got on the news, and like people just like donated to him so that he could get across the ocean, where he, you know, continued driving across Europe, down through Africa, eventually got to India, where he met a woman, married her in 1991. And then for the next 4 years, she rode on the back of the motorcycle.
That's a ride or die right there. Wow. Wow. What a partner that is.
Cruising. So by the end of the 10 years, he had traveled through 214 countries and territories. He had gone through 13 64-page passports. His motorcycle had received one engine replacement. He'd consumed 12,500 gallons of fuel. Went through 86 tires, 12 batteries, and 9 seats.
Oof. That's the real metric. Nine seats. Oh, my God. I've never even heard of this situation.
Me neither.
Couple things. So he chose a 15-year-old bike to do it on.
It was 5 years old when he left.
Oh, got it. Okay. I was going to say why. and then I love how the donation situation, he was like, he was pulling the crowdfunding before crowdfunding was a real thing.
True.
That's amazing.
Like, yeah, I wonder how he got on the news. Like, is he just sitting down there like on the George Washington Bridge with a cardboard sign? You know, he was the original dude with a sign. Give me money for my world tour.
Yeah, that's amazing, though. That I mean, what would compel someone? I mean, I love to travel. I love cars. I love to feel the wind in my hair just as much as the next person. But that's like, that's psychotic. That's a psychotic level of travel.
I wonder how his, you know what, felt.
I was going to say, I bet his taint is just destroyed. Yeah. Wow. Also, fun fact, not even really that fun, but years ago, I got my motorcycle license, and I think I knew that I was going to get it just to get it, because I've never ridden a motorcycle since. And I really have no intention of doing so. I just kind of did it. It was like a test for myself. It's a
learning experience.
Did it. Got the endorsement, and I just have not even thought about it.
Is that permanent? Like,
it is.
So you never have to retake it or anything. That's cool. So at least you're in a position to emergency ride motorcycles.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't even tell you. I couldn't tell you how to do it.
I bet you could figure it out.
Maybe.
As long as there's no gear shifting involved.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sure I'm going to get roasted, but The shifting is so weird. So weird on a motorcycle. It's so odd.
Automatic motorcycles? Electric motorcycles?
It's a thing now, I guess, but I don't think it's super popular.
I can imagine why.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. From a shifting standpoint, I mean, we love to shift in cars. That just feels a little less satisfying when you're moving your toe around. I don't know. That's just the way I felt about it.
All right, jumping ahead. April 3rd, 1885, the internal combustion engine is patented.
No big deal.
No big deal. Not like we like those anymore, right? Gottlieb Daimler and Wilhelm Maybach started developing what would become known as the grandfather clock engine. It weighed about 110 pounds, rose 30 inches in height, and I think that it had half a horsepower. They ultimately fit it to what would become known as the Reitwagen, which is translated, I think, to riding car, but it's more closely resembles a motorcycle. Many people call it the first modern motorcycle, but it had training wheels.
Oh, sick.
Yeah.
I'd probably have a motorcycle if there was training wheels on it.
There you go.
Yeah, I'd be into that.
Imagine riding that motorcycle 450,000 miles.
Again, this is one of those scenarios. It's 1885. You and the homeboy are in the back of your yard in a shed.
Literally a garden shed.
How are you physically making this? Like, what is the diagram? Where are you getting the materials? Like, what sort of hand-to-hand combat are you having to do with all this metal to create this thing? And you don't even know how to make the thing. You're just writing it.
That's so
the
true.
First time. I don't get it. I don't understand. How do people invent shit like this? How did this come to be?
That's so true. I feel like a lot of these things have origin stories of like accidents. It's like, oh, I noticed steam move a pebble.
I guess, but it's like, look, I'm no mechanic, but whenever I see someone tearing down, particularly an internal combustion engine, it's like mind blowing to me. Totally. How much shit is going on in there and how complex it is and how every single thing relies on every other thing to be exactly perfect in its function. And then there's these two guys bumbling around in a shed. And they're just like, oh, check out this thing we made.
Right.
What?
And still, they have their names to this day on some of the finest cars produced.
And they're more than half a horsepower as well.
Maybe. April 3rd, 1966, Battista Farina, founder of Pininfarina Coach Builders, dies at age 72. He came about at the time when coach building was really popular in the 1930s. You could like literally order a custom car from, you know, Rolls-Royce, Cadillac, companies like that. And so he built bodies for Alfa Romeo, Rolls-Royce, Hispano Suiza, Fiat, and many others. And to this day, you can still get Pininfarina bodies for prototyping and limited series bodywork. I think that they still do like some of those like boat tail Rolls-Royces that like Beyonce bought.
Those are beautiful.
Right?
Really cool.
I could be wrong about them doing that, but it's that sort of work.
I was going to say, I bet that quote unquote limited series bodywork services is not your like local guy with a rubber mallet banging out panels.
Need some paintless dent repair.
Yeah. Something's telling me it's probably some pretty wild work for a pretty wild price.
Yeah. It's not cheap. April 3rd, 1998, McLaren announces that it signed 13-year-old karting phenom Lewis Hamilton to a racing deal. Maybe you've heard of this guy.
He's 13?
Yeah. He was just a champion at the go-kart tracks. And, you know, that's where a lot of these F1 kids get their start. But for those who are unfamiliar, he has since won 7 F1 championships. He's tied for the most ever with Michael Schumacher. That's driver's championships, not constructor championships, for those keeping score. He also holds the record for most wins at 103, most pole positions at 104, and the most podiums at 197. But he hasn't won anything since Max Verstappen started.
I think he's winning every day, bro.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah. So I had known about F1. And then, of course, like the rest of the world, Drive to Survive came out. And then everybody was talking about it.
Totally.
And maybe this isn't groundbreaking, but I had never heard a woman ever say anything about F1 or really anything automotive or racing related ever in my life. Personally, I'd never had any woman ever talk to me about something. overnight that show came out, and I have probably had 15 different women. I was overhearing women talking about the show and the racers and the results. And it was like a bro session, but with all women talking about F1. And I mean, I'm sure there are women out there that love F1 racing, but really also you watch that show, it's just a bunch of super hot dudes who are super rich. So, I mean, that's cool.
Lewis Hamilton's salary is $55 million.
And he dated Rihanna. So obviously something's right. working out.
Man, and he's driving for a Ferrari next year. But you're right. I mean, I feel like that show really kind of opened the floodgates on just motorsports in general, because now there's a NASCAR version, and there's also like other, like there's baseball or the football ones with the quarterbacks. Like they're doing all these sports documentaries now. But I do think that that kind of fly on the wall, you know, a style of documentary for what is that show called?
Drive to Survive. I still think it's the hot rich guy angle, though.
Sure.
Like, I mean,
that's why I watch it.
Yeah, totally. Like, I just feel like that's the missing piece here that really shot it into outer space.
Totally. I mean, that lifestyle's unattainable for us.
Well, and also just looking at the cars. My favorite part of that show is when you're looking at the car and you look at the sponsors on the car. Mm. And you're like, oh, the most absolutely ludicrous money-drenched sponsors are the ones that are sponsoring these cars and these teams. Dude. And you're like, this makes so much sense.
Right.
Why there's so much money in the sport. Every racer is just given the nicest watch. They're all wearing like $500,000 watches, $1 million watches. Totally. You know, they're gifted all of these cars. If you're racing for Ferrari, you're obviously getting a free Ferrari to drive around while you're with the team because it's free PR, right?
Right.
Why would you not? Just incredible. Like the perks and the wealth of it is just dripping.
I mean, it's crazy too. Like think about getting into F1 from like a not a sports, you know, position.
Totally.
Not a driver, not a mechanic, but just there's the PR, there's the management of the team. There's also, actually, so one of the organizations that I work with, the RPM Foundation, the social media coordinator for it, I believe, Kinsey Wilson, shout out Kinsey. She's getting her master's in motorsports management in Italy right now, and so she's at tons of these F1
oh my god, so like, cool.
Yeah,
so smart.
Yeah, she's killing it.
Wow.
Why
didn't we do that?
Because we didn't know it was a thing.
That's true. See, we were just two dudes bumbling around in the shed. We didn't know what was going on, but we didn't.
I'm
we
still
didn't
in the shed.
We didn't end up on the right side of history. Yeah. But yeah, that's wow. That's wild.
Yeah,
it's something else to behold. I think the other little bit of secret sauce going on here is it's such a global thing.
True.
Whereas you think about, let's say, the NBA, right? Of course, it's big here in the United States, but like F1 is as global as it gets.
That's true. It's
like and that the built-in soccer. Audience is global from the get-go.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm sure there are people that...
There's 20 events, and they're in 20 different... Well, 17 different countries.
Yeah.
You know?
It's... I mean, I don't know how it took someone so long to... Well, one, make the show.
Yeah.
You would think that would have occurred a long time ago.
True. I mean, it's just good marketing.
And syndication. Like, what was the F1 syndication before that show came out? Like, where did you have to... Did you have to pay to watch
That's
it?
That's the other thing. Well, yeah, you had to have cable. I mean, I think a lot of it's on, like, ABC or NBC or whatever.
Yeah.
But also, you have to get up at 2 a.m. to watch an F1 race. Because it's in, you know, Dubai or whatever.
Right.
But, yeah, I definitely got into it because of that show. And... Now that I already know what's happening, though,
yeah.
I don't really watch the show as much because now I'm like checking the race results.
Sure. I never quite got really into it. And I think it's my wife and I watched like maybe a season and a half.
Yeah.
And it was a little repetitive. I was like, okay, I get it. I see what's happening here. But I feel like if I were to force myself to watch another season or two, I would probably be dedicated to it and love it and follow it.
Sure.
Because it has all the ingredients of things that I enjoy. True. Hot dudes, a lot of money, fast cars. Like, those are all cool things. So I would think that I would have followed it more, but who knows? Maybe I'll catch on later, and I'll be the last person in the world to love F1 and follow along.
Yeah, well, I've never seen... I can't remember the show. On HBO, with the dragons and all that stuff.
Oh, Game of Thrones.
Yeah, never seen Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah, you're the last person to have not seen it. That's okay.
Can't remember the name.
There someone has to be the last person to discover something.
All right, enough free PR for Drive to Survive. April 3rd, 2017, the Toyota 86 debuts, but we talked about this last week.
We did.
It, of course, was the Scion FRS before that, and so this was the first year that it became the Toyota 86.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just looking at the prices of these, about $30,000 for the absolute base model new.
For the new one, second gen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm into it.
Yeah. I rented one and loved it. It was incredible. And I owned a first gen, as I've said before. And I think I may have mentioned this before as well. The dream, I think, for me, in terms of a project car, would be a Gen 1 BRZ with a V8 swap.
Oh, wow.
And lots of people have done it, and I believe there are even like pre-made kits now for it.
With like a crate engine.
It's like a drop-in situation. I mean, it's not that easy, but you know what I mean.
Don't buy it off Temu.
Yeah, exactly. But I just can't even imagine what that would be like.
Seems like fun.
Yeah, 100%. Drive that into a wall in a second.
April 4th, 1929, Carl Benz passes away. He held the patent for the very first car, and of course, is half of Mercedes-Benz. He built that first car in 1886, but it was his wife, Bertha, who ultimately swiped it out from under him and drove a good distance, I believe something like 40 miles or so, to demonstrate the viability of the automobile. There's plenty of good shows about that.
Yeah. Let's talk about this. I was just looking back on one of our previous points. 1885, the internal combustion engine is patented. 1886, the first car is patented.
Yeah.
And it's is it related?
They were very close to each other. I feel like I watched like a documentary on this, and like maybe they knew each other or something, but they were all in Germany, and they were all making the first motorized vehicles.
Yeah.
But I don't, yeah, I don't know. What
I wonder when the transmission was patented.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But yeah, it is like, just, it shows how, like, how rapid the development was of the automobile from that point forward. But of course it'd be another 20 years or so before anybody could actually afford one.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting.
April 4th, 1996, the Jaguar XK8 debuts. I just want to include this because it replaced the XJS, which had been in production for 20 years prior, and you can get that with a V12. And my brother and his wife had actually inherited one with a V12 in it, I think.
Really?
It didn't run, unfortunately. Or maybe it did.
Go figure.
But not well. And them having that really like made me appreciate those cars, like super long hood. Bonnet, I should say.
There you go.
Yeah.
Really? When was that?
10 years ago or so.
And they didn't drive it around? It was just kind of...
No, I mean, I think they did for a little bit. I think they actually did have it and it ran and drove, but not a very practical car for a growing family.
We'll yeah. say that. Wow. I can't imagine it was fast.
It was big.
Yeah. Very, a different thing. Yes, yeah.
April 4th, 2007, the 1 millionth Mini Cooper is built.
Oh.
Since BMW acquired it, of course. I have to say, I'm very fond of these cars. I had a 2008 Mini Clubman, the R56S, and that was one of the most fun cars that I bought and did nothing to. Put some wheels on it, and it was zippy, great fuel efficiency. I drove that across the country, literally back and forth from Chicago.
Wow. Yeah. And that was the supercharged one, right?
Yeah.
Did it have a cool whine to it at all, or was it kind of a
quiet supercharger? If you got it up there, if you put your foot into it, it would make a little noise.
Yeah, and it wasn't a John Cooper Works.
Nah, but I've been looking around. I kind of got the bug.
I know.
And those come up on my daily Craigslist scrolls.
Yes, I did realize in the many hunts that you and I have done in the past that in some universe... Is it the Clubman? What's the longer wagony one?
So it was the Cooper and then the Clubman, which is the one I had.
That yeah.
The three door with the barn doors in the back.
Okay.
And then now the Clubman is like a four door longer.
Yeah. Cooper. So now the new Clubman.
There's also
a John Cooper. And a Countryman. Anyway, they do like John Cooper Works versions of all of them.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're kind of checking all the boxes.
Totally. I think they're fun cars.
Are they pieces of shit, though?
Mine had, when I sold it, 99,000 miles. I didn't want to hit 100K, and it sold it.
Is it a stick?
Yeah, six-speed. zippy little thing, and it had the check engine light on for about 4 years. The TPMS light was on constantly.
That one's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it didn't require like much more than I think any other car would.
Yeah.
And it felt good inside. Like it felt like a little, like I hate to call it like a sports car, but it gripped you like in the seat. Like it was a tight little seat and like it sat low and small windshield.
Did it feel too small to really be able to use it for what it thinks it's going to do with its size? I don't know if that question made any sense.
I know exactly what you're trying to say. You know, it's supposed to be the cargo version of the,
right.
the Cooper. And frankly, I slept in it several times.
Really? Could you stretch out?
Sure. The back seat would fold down flat.
Oh, nice. And
it was like just enough to kind of, you know, be in the field position back there without killing yourself.
You could dog that thing too, right? You totally. Could easily dog that thing. But not if you don't put the seats down though, right?
It'd be pretty tight back there. Yeah. Depends on how big your dog is.
Yeah.
But
interesting.
Yeah, it was a great little car. And you could open the back doors from the inside, which was awesome. Nice. 'Cause they open, you know, like the barn door style. So
yeah. Hmm. Maybe I'll investigate again.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do like them. I've always liked the way they're styled. They have kind of fun, cool options. And the John Cooper Works ones, I'm sure, are just ridiculous.
They're a party car.
Especially now. I mean, they're incredibly powerful. I think new one is like over 300 horsepower.
It's a small car.
Yeah.
Well, they call it a mini. It's not so mini anymore, but it's...
Yeah.
They're doing what they can.
I'm heading to Google right now.
Yeah. April 4th, 2012, the Subaru Crosstrek premieres. It's essentially just a lifted Impreza. I think it's literally just a lifted Impreza. It's
like the off-road, same frame.
More off-roady version.
Man, that car has people in a chokehold, and especially where we live. I mean, we live in like the heart of
Subaru country
in the Pacific Northwest here, but particularly in the town that we're in called Bellingham, it's a joke. Like it's an actual joke. It's a running joke when you're on the road. 6 out of 10 cars are Subarus. They're all clapped.
Hey, Jordan, what do you drive?
I know. This is part of the problem.
Hey, Jordan,
the
one what do
thing
I drive?
I said that I'd never drive. And we've talked about this before. A clapped out old dog holler Subaru that I bought just because it's this utilitarian box that I can carry my dog around in. Yeah. That's it. But I don't like it. But I did always like the first gen Crosstrek. Always thought they were the coolest. Another car where I know people put dogs in them, but I just wonder, they look really small from the outside. And when you have a dog that weighs more than 20 pounds, I wonder how they're doing back there.
That's fair. So I was reading or looking at the like build a car on Subaru. And for some reason, the Crosstrek has like an extra 1.5 square feet of cubic storage space in the back, which I don't understand how, because it's actually the same.
Maybe the floor is lower.
Oh, from the Impreza.
Yeah. Like the literal, like not the actual bottom of the trunk, but like just the
Interesting.
Yeah, sometimes like not having a spare tire is a thing now. A lot of cars don't come with a spare tire.
That's fair.
Stuff like that, little sneaky ways to pretend like it's bigger when it's not now, or whatever it is. It's
for my pet mouse.
There you go.
April 5th, 1921, Lewis and Arthur Chevrolet start the Chevrolet Brothers Manufacturing Company. It was actually kind of like a they would build like kits to make other cars go faster. And I just thought it was interesting to add this because Lewis Chevrolet started Chevy with Billy Durant, same guy from General Motors, and he essentially used Chevrolet to buy back his position at GM. And ultimately, Lewis and Billy split ways. So he went into all these other businesses, including building performance parts for the Ford Model T, which is just so crazy to think about a Chevrolet brother building performance parts for a Ford Model T. But his career was in racing, and so this is all he knew. He was an engineer, mechanic.
Yeah. I'm just saying, what could a performance part for the Model T possibly be?
I think it's more about taking stuff off of it.
Yeah, just the old weight reduction.
Yeah.
We took the roof off your car. It's faster now.
It's faster now. Aerodynamics.
Yeah.
Speaking of aerodynamics, he even built airplane engines.
Of course he did.
So, again, all these guys in like the pioneering days of you know, the automobile, just geniuses.
Just freestyling. Yeah. Freestyling engine airplanes. Engine airplanes? Airplane engines is what I'm trying to say. Just like freestyling this crazy stuff.
Right. It's like I could barely build an app.
There was no CAD then. Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
April 5th, 1940. You're going to like this. The first concept car, the Buick Y-Job, is introduced to the press. So
the Y-Job? Buick doing themselves no favors ever.
The why did we do this job?
God. Oh, man. Hey, check out this amazing vehicle that we're designing. Yeah. It's we're going to get you hyped up. It's incredible. It's beautiful. It's luxurious. It's fast. And what is it called? It's called the Y-Job.
I actually wonder why. I never thought about that. That's a good question.
It doesn't make... I mean, nothing about that is cool in any way.
It was mostly like a styling practice, like a styling... like styling and engineering.
Yeah, example. They needed a marketing department.
Yeah.
Real bad.
That's what it's for. The president of Buick or General Motors, I think it was actually Alfred Sloan, drove that thing around for like several years.
Wow.
Wow.
What do we know about it? Do we know anything about it?
It had retractable headlights, which was one of the first vehicles to have that aside from the cord.
Pop-up
headlights.
Whoa, okay.
I think it had some styling cues that would actually end up on some of the production Buicks later. Yeah, look it up.
Whoa. Okay, I've got it now. I've got it pulled up. It is actually really beautiful. Sorry, Buick. But it's not champagne. It's black. Looks amazing. But I will say this again: amazing design, beautiful vehicle. Thankfully, not champagne colored. But again, the Y job. Who looks at this and says, you know what we should name this? The Y job.
Why?
Yeah. Wow. I think that's like a whole episode on its own. Delving into the what the fuck happened behind the Y job name.
It's incredible. And there's some people we can talk to.
Oh, there's got to be. Also, yeah. Wow. This thing is really cool.
It's a beautiful car.
It's
on display, I think, at the General Motors Heritage Center.
Yeah, it's sweet. They should remake this.
I think they tried something like the Buick Blackhawk in the 90s. Yeah, there you go.
Interesting.
Jordan showing me some pictures on the old interwebs.
Yeah, wow. This thing is pretty cool looking. They really had the big grill going.
Oh, yeah. And that was like the next new thing in car production.
Cool.
April 5th. 1963, Craig Breedlove. I feel like this guy makes it into our show a lot. He was doing a lot of speed stuff.
He's a go fast kind of guy.
Craig Breedlove breaks the 400 mile per hour land speed barrier, hitting 407.
Chill, dude.
447, April 5th, 1963. That is fast. The current land speed record was hit in the Thrust SSC, driven by Royal Air Force pilot Andy Green. On October 15, 1997, hitting 763.035 miles per hour.
What was Craig driving to hit the 400 in
1963? I don't remember. I was going to try and make a joke.
I mean, it probably had a jet engine on it.
I don't know. I don't think that it... Maybe. I know the Thrust did. I don't know if they were at that point. Maybe.
400 miles an hour. That puts like a modern Bugatti to shame.
Yeah. Well, yes.
By a long shot.
And we'll talk about that in a little bit
too. Yes. I knew that was foreshadowing. Still, I mean, that's unreal. Can you imagine how sketchy whatever he was in was in 1963 going 400 miles an hour?
Yeah, it was essentially a jet car, Yorker.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, yeah, I can see it in the reflection right there.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. So it's like really a lot less of a car and more of a jet.
I mean, that's what the whole idea of the land speed record is just build something that goes as fast as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, as you'll see, we'll talk about the production cars and 250.
Yeah.
That's still wild.
And I'd poop my pants.
That thing looks like a jet too.
Yeah. I'd poop my pants.
Probably would.
Long before 250.
April 6th, 1853. Man, there's a lot of 1850 stuff in here. I'm telling you, we got to get down to trivia and tell those guys to do some pre-1900 car trivia. I know it all. April 6th, 1853. Emil Jelinek is born. Probably a name you don't recognize, but he built a car called the Mercedes, which he named after his daughter. And after it became successful, he actually changed his name to Emil Jelinek Mercedes. What a cool guy. He went on, he said himself, this is probably the first time that a father has taken his daughter's name.
Okay, sir. You did not change it for your daughter. You changed it because it was a successful car company. Let's get it straight, all right?
True.
But I like the sentiment.
To be associated with that.
Yeah. I like the sentiment, though.
I wonder if his daughter Mercedes was the first woman to share a name with a car in general. Because I feel like there's like, you know, there's Porsches, there's Mercedes, there's...
I'd put money on that.
It was pretty early in the auto industry.
1853? Or no, well, the 1901. Car came out in
1901. So you know, unless you're naming your daughter Patton Motorwagon.
Or the Wrightmobile or whatever that thing was. The Rheinwagon?
Wrightwagon. Wrightwagon. Yeah. April 6, 1904, Erwin Komenda, the designer of the Volkswagen Beetle and the Porsche 356 is born. Had to include this because he's one of those people that doesn't get enough credit in the annals of automotive history. You know, everybody thinks, well, Ferdinand Porsche designed the Volkswagen Bug, and he didn't. And also, they kind of ripped off that design from like a bunch of other cars. But Erwin Komenda did definitely pen the 356, and it's just an iconic, beautiful Porsche design. And
nice. Is it a Beetle or a Bug to you?
It's a Type 1.
Mmm. True car guy thing to say.
Yeah, right. You know, that's a good question. I think it's officially marketed as the Beetle, but I grew up calling it a Slug Bug.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Better alternative.
Getting punched mostly by my brothers.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like the, well, I don't know. I guess I just use it interchangeably.
April 6, 1908, Carter Car founder Byron Carter dies at age 44 from complications that occurred after he got hit in the jaw with a crank start in the car. The engine backfired, hit him in the jaw. He had just stopped to like help a stranded motorist, and that's his prize for being a decent human, is getting an infection and dying.
Wow, that's some 1908 stuff.
Right. And what came out of this is his good friend Henry Leland, who was the founder of Cadillac, ultimately, you know, being in despair, went on to develop the automatic starter. So, thank you, Byron Carter, for getting smacked in the jaw.
Yeah.
We now just have to turn a key instead of a crank.
I appreciate your sacrifice.
Right. And here we go. April 6, 2013, the Bugatti Veyron Grand Sport Vitesse. How would you pronounce that?
I don't know.
Yeah. Became the fastest street legal roadster in the world, reaching an average top speed of 408 kilometers. That's 254.04 miles per hour.
Fast.
You don't think you can do it?
Okay, so I'm sure like many who are interested in cars at all and who have access to YouTube watch Auto NL, Top Auto NL, amazing channel on YouTube. This guy in Germany who just basically drives every new car and he takes out an Autobahn test.
Oh, sorry.
And it's interesting to see cars that we see every day on the road or ones we don't get here, you know, in Europe, but you know, a lot of stuff like general everyday cars, what they can really do nowadays and how speed is so readily accessible, even in base model cars now. It's really incredible.
True.
And what's been interesting to watch is not so much the acceleration of a lot of the stuff they drives. I mean, he's driven Bugattis and it's really cool to see. It's mind blowing how fast they accelerate. And it's really crazy to see them at full speed.
Sure.
But the crazier thing for me is watching the sustained speed at the top of a range of a car. So he'll get on the Autobahn, you know, he'll accelerate. You'll see how fast it climbs in the actual speed, but then it'll like hit the limiter of the speed of the car. And then he'll just be riding the limiter because like the going governor in the car.
90 miles an hour.
Yeah. And he'll just hold it. And so you're able to kind of watch in real time as what it would be like to just hold that sort of mile an hour speed, and mind-blowingly fast. I mean, and then seeing cars, you know, he's passing and the speed at which he's blowing by those cars is just unbelievable.
What I was going to say too is it illustrates how much better drivers are in Germany because they know not to drive slow in the left lane.
Yes, exactly.
Please get out of the way.
Yes.
But that's cool. I need to check that one out.
It's a really cool channel. But what I was going to get at here was like, yes, 254 miles an hour is crazy fast, but he'll routinely be driving cars at almost 200 miles an hour. Just, and they're like fairly standard cars.
Yeah.
And he'll just be up there, top of the rev range, like the speed governor stopping him from going faster. And they're just cruising along. You know, he's in like a 5 series BMW just mashing. Yeah. It's just mind blowing. And it's like totally quiet and composed. Amazing. Modern cars.
Listening to some sort of symphonic music.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I appreciate that.
But the speed, the acceleration, I can't even imagine.
Jeez, baby. April 7, 1902, Texaco is founded as the Texas Fuel Company. I think we're going to run out of gas in the next 30 years.
I don't know, dude.
All right, next topic. April 7, 1936, the Fiat 500, a.k.a. the Topolino, is introduced. There's so many variations or versions of this, but this was the original Fiat 500. I know how much you like them, so I had to include this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Good call.
April 7th, 1947, Henry Ford dies.
RIP.
There's not a whole lot that needs to be said about him, but he founded two car companies before he founded the Ford Motor Company. I believe one was the Detroit Automobile Company and one was the Henry Ford Company. So don't give up on your dreams.
Yeah, I guess so.
You too can grow into an old crotchety anti-Semite.
Great.
April 7th, 1987, Nissan hits 20 million exports. 20 millionth car to be exported from Japan was a Nissan Pulsar. The first car that Nissan ever exported was in 1934. It went to Australia, and the first time they imported cars to the U.S. was in 1958. So 20 million cars, essentially, in 30 years.
Okay.
Pretty good.
You know, my wife drives a Nissan Rogue Sport, and I kind of love it. I'm not going to lie.
Did you see... I don't like to keep bringing up other media channels because you should just listen to us. But Donut did a thing on Nissan Rogue today.
Really?
Like, I think Nissan like paid them mm-hmm. money to just do some of their goofy posts. You have to check it out.
Yeah.
It's like, what would you put on? You have two options for like rice. Like, what toppings would you put on it? And they're like Nissan Rogue or something like that. It's goofy, but good marketing.
Yep.
And look, it worked.
Totally. And somehow, it's the only car I've ever driven with a CVT transmission that doesn't make me want to die, even though it sounds like it's going to explode constantly just because it's a CVT. But I like the way that car drives. It's a perfect all-rounder car. God, I really am aging.
I was about to ask you what kind of fuel efficiency it gets.
You know, that actually is the thing that I'm blown away by how not great it is. Yeah, it's actually like high teens. You could probably get... I don't know. You could probably get mid-20s if you're really babying it. The issue is it's a totally underpowered four-banger. And so you have to wring this fucking thing's throat everywhere you go just to get anywhere, get up to the speed limit.
True.
So you're in this weird thing where you're like driving this underpowered car that you'd think you'd be getting great gas mileage with, but you're just flogging it to get up to speed limit speeds. Yeah.
You're right. It's got a little bit of a commute, too. Where's that Tesla at?
Yeah, no, we're working on it.
April 7th, 2009, GM announces that Pontiac is going to be discontinued. The last one would come off the line the following January. It was a G6.
Nice. I'm a G8 fan myself, but who isn't?
Give me a GTO.
Yeah. Well, you'd like a G8 too. It's got the gigantic 6.2 liter V8 in it. Oof. 6-speed. Total sleeper sedan.
It was like that and like the Cadillac that came with the Corvette drivetrain.
Yep.
Okay.
CTSV.
Yeah. April 8th, 1971, automobile producer Fritz von Opel, the grandson of Opel Car Company founder Adam Opel, dies at age 72. I have to include anything with Opel because I love Opel GTs. And also he built a rocket car out of an Opel GT, so...
Of course he did, because that's what you do with cars, I guess. Yeah. You put rocket engines on them and make them into not cars. They're just airplanes for the ground.
What? April 8th, 1998, Ford announces plans to use side impact airbags on all U.S. models. This is only 26 years ago.
Sure, I'll take it.
And now think of all the automotive safety gadgets and gizmos that we have. And airbags were just 20 that long ago. And it was 20, 30 years before that, that seatbelts even became a thing.
Yeah.
I feel like the progression of
us
not being in control is fast.
Well, and it's interesting too, like in the 95 Miata that I had, the one of the new features for the 95 year of that Miata was a passenger side airbag. So
did just it have one a key prior. To turn the airbag off?
I think it did actually.
Yeah.
Maybe. But it was like a big thing that it was getting a second airbag. And
it's a lot of weight for a little car.
Yeah, for sure. And I remember as I was driving the thing around one day, I pulled up behind some other car and they had a bumper sticker on it that said, "No airbags, we die like men." And I thought that's one of the best stickers I'd seen in a while.
I can appreciate that. And last but not least today, on April 8th, 2004, the 1 millionth Skoda Fabia leaves the assembly line. And for this one, I have to bring in a special guest, my wife, Marlena Gish Corey, who hails from Eastern Europe and was fortunate enough to get some time inside an old Skoda. Hey, Marley.
Hey, babe.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
It is I, the woman who hails from Eastern Europe.
So growing up in Portland. For those who don't know, Portland's in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
Growing up in Poland, rather, your family had a Skoda. Do you have any fond memories of that car?
Yeah, so this is circa 1988, 89-ish.
Great year. Good time.
Yeah, good times. Good old days. I think
for the record, she was an infant. I'm not dating a grandma.
An old soul.
Old soul, yes, yes. I forget who bought it, but my grandpa and my parents drove a Skoda. And it was like a beautiful color. It was like orange, reddish.
Mm.
And I was, to Brian's point, I was maybe two or three at this point. So what I remember is kind of the shell interior. Like it was very bare bones on the inside in terms of the doors.
Well, Skoda was a Czech automaker. And so it was along the same lines of...
Was it Yugo-y?
Yugo.
Nice.
Is what I understand.
It was just a metal frame and a steering wheel and some wheels, and that was it pretty much,
basically. And from what I remember, the upholstery was like zebra or something. It was like black and white.
Amazing.
Wow. Cool.
And the memories I have are my grandpa putting the seatbelt across his chest but not clicking it, like not buckling it.
Nice.
In. And us being like, "Grandpa, like, come on, put it." And he's like, "No one will know."
Because so, that's what it's about.
Because that's what you do in the countryside in Poland in the late 80s. And I also have a memory of falling asleep in the back when my mom was driving and there was like a crazy rainstorm. And I just felt really cozy back there. So those are my memories.
What was it, like a four-door or two-door? Remember?
I think it was a four-door.
Okay. What kind of car was it? Just like a sedan type car or not wagony or okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was very beloved. We had it for a number of years.
And then
it was very durable. The durable Skoda.
Did you drive it across the Atlantic Ocean when you came to America?
Yeah, I took a ferry from Germany to New York and then New York and Sky.
Womp.
But,
Skoda makes cool things, and for some reason in my head I can't picture one at all right now. Like I know they have modern.
Yeah, they're owned by Volkswagen now,
right?
And they're just a pretty standard car company to this day.
Yeah.
So,
well, we know you have to replace. You have to replace your car now. That I've been hearing.
I do my Hyundai 2012 Accent.
Maybe it's time to get a little Skoda and import a little Skoda action.
Let's go. And I believe that this year or next year is the 100th anniversary of Skoda's founding. So,
it's meant to
there
be.
You go. I'll have to inform my familia.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us ever so briefly and sharing those fun little tidbits of Eastern car culture with us.
Anytime.
If you have a photo, you need to share it with Brian so you can put it out on the socials.
Yeah,
I'm sure someone has one. Yeah, and maybe like on one of those slides that you pop into
those
projectors, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actual film.
Whoa.
Everybody's like, "What's that?"
What a delight, y'all. Thank you for listening this week. Please follow along. Give us a like, subscribe, send us some hate mail, whatever you'd like to do. We appreciate you and hope you have a good one. See you next week.
Drive history every day.